We want to tell you about a show we think you'll love. Derelict is an immersive sci-fi horror podcast. The story begins at the bottom of Earth's ocean, where an ancient artifact resembling a giant door has just been found. The galaxy's most powerful corporation has built a massive secret laboratory around the door, intending to unlock the secrets of the artifact and discover what lies inside. But some mysteries should remain buried, and some doors should never be opened. The second season, currently releasing, picks up several years after the events of the first, from fathoms below Earth's ocean to the depths of space. If you're a fan of movies like Alien, the works of H.P. Lovecraft, or games like Deep Space and Bioshock, you'll love Derelict. Unravel the mystery and subscribe to Derelict. That's D-E-R-E-L-I-C-T, wherever you listen to podcasts. And after the episode, stay tuned to hear the trailer. Hey guys, thank you for tuning in for this episode of 13. Before we get started, I want to shout out our new patrons. Sarah Brown, Susan Rail, Shuja Rosado, and Annie Jo Baker. Thank you all so much for your support. If you've ever been curious about joining our pod fam, but you don't know where to start, come check us out over at patreon.com/13pod. We have tiers as low as $1 for folks who just want the ad-free main episodes, or $5, which gives you access to extra stories each month, plus over 2 years of our backlog. Just click the link in the show notes to learn more. And now, without further ado, this month's second release is Only the Shape, written by Ange Baker and narrated by Haberlin Roberts. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show.
There's a hitchhiker ghost on Rikers Hill. She might show up sometime after midnight, on the Friday nights where it rains. Only might and sometime are the closest to a schedule you can get with her. I knew this because I knew people who'd met her, though most of them had just felt the presence in their car. A couple people swore they actually saw a shape, and one even claimed there was a woman with her hair in a knot on the back of her head, holding a broad-brimmed hat, wearing a long, old-timey dress. Rikers Hill is dangerous when it rains, especially in the dark. It's about 1.5 lanes wide and goes around multiple cliff faces. If you encounter someone coming the opposite direction, one of you will have to back up until you can pull half off the road. One Friday night, I was excruciatingly lonely, so I drove to the town liquor store, put the vodka on the floor of the passenger seat, and took the long way home. It was late, somewhat after midnight, and it had just stopped raining. When I got out of the city limits, I rolled the windows down and turned the radio up loud. I think I had the Darkness on the Edge of Town CD in the stereo. It was fresh and peaceful, and I fantasized about this being one of those gentle nights I'd come to miss one day. I felt the foundations of a ritual that was uncomfortable and sad. I knew I'd take Rikers Hill as part of the drive. There was a little drizzle after the heavy rain earlier. And I guess I kind of hoped I'd meet the hitchhiker ghost. I didn't expect to. I didn't believe in ghosts, even though I did believe the people who'd met them. You know where this story is going. I was almost to the highest point of Rikers Hill. It overlooks a broad swatch of valley with calico patches of woods and fields and brindled with roads. I was musing on specklings of yellow lights, people staying up late or leaving the light on for those who were, when the ambient temperature of the car's cabin dropped several degrees. I tried to see the back seat in my rearview mirror, but it and the windows had fogged up with the temperature change. I hit the defrost button, and once I'd ascertained I was on a mostly straight stretch of road, I turned my head. Out of the corner of my eye, in the back passenger side seat, sat a pale woman holding a broad-brimmed hat. "Hi?" I asked, and the figure startled. "Hey, it's okay." I found myself speaking as if to a frightened child, and I don't know where my next words came from. "You're safe." I couldn't see the specifics of her reaction, although she seemed like she was trying to speak. But first, she had to remember how. I spotted a chunk of green up ahead, and I pulled into it, halfway off the road. I shifted the car into park and turned the music down. Then I turned and looked at her. Her eyes were wide and dark, and she was somewhat stoutly built, like a farmer of old. Being a ghost, her age wasn't quite obvious, but maybe she was supposed to be somewhat younger than middle age. A little older than me. She kept opening and closing her mouth. Finally, she said,
"Who are you?"
I forgot for a second. I really did. Jenny. Jenny Herndon. She nodded.
"Jenny Herndon,"
she said to herself. Her accent was a little Irish, a little Kentucky, like the remains of something half abandoned somewhere over the Atlantic. "What's your name?" I asked her. She looked at me for a long time, and I was worried she hadn't heard me. But finally, she replied.
"Maura Lynch."
"Myra Lynch?" I tried to repeat it back to her. She shook her head and said it again. We went back and forth a couple of times. And finally, she spelled her name out for me, with more patience than I could have ever mustered.
M-O-I-R-A.
"Oh, sorry about that, Moira." She smiled a little. She glanced around and looked back at me. She opened her mouth and shut it. Opened it again. Finally, she spoke.
"Where am I?"
I took a breath, and at this point, I noticed she wasn't breathing. "You're in my car. We're just east of town."
"Town? That is..."
"Brick." She looked at her palms and grew vaguely disconcerted. Maybe she could see that she was see-through, but she definitely wasn't sure if it was a problem.
"Yes, Brick. I lived there. I thought I still did. But it's been a while."
I chewed on my tongue a couple times. That is something I remember vividly. And then I asked, "What year is it?" She suddenly looked so sad, even angry.
"Last I wrote it down, it was 1887. But that's not right, is it?"
I shook my head.
"Well, what year is it then?"
She looked afraid of the answer. "It's 2019, I said, my words like careful footsteps.
"So, I passed away 132 years ago."
Her expression disclosed a keen understanding and a sharp rebuke of any contradiction. I nodded.
Where do you think my soul is?"
I was taken aback, as it had been a long time since I thought of the soul as something different than a ghost. But, after all, I was now dealing with a ghost that could talk. I couldn't answer her. After a moment, she spoke up.
"That's reasonable. You couldn't know that."
She responded with such conviction. I was afraid of her, of that astuteness. She could probably recite the Bible back to front, whether or not she'd ever learned to read. 132 years of crystallized intelligence without the biochemical wear and tear associated with a living life. Turns out, all you needed to give a ghost any awareness was to talk to them. I expected her to panic, but she became so still, so calm, so sure. And she spoke to me like she would have in life, I imagine. I remember idly wondering, if ghosts are see-through, why can't you see their insides? She reached out her hand, half smiling as a comfort, and declared,
I can see through you.
That was something Brick had that the city didn't. Ghosts. The city felt like it hid your soul from terrible things within its labyrinth of buildings and people. You'd die one day, and that was it. In Brick, where the woods pressed up against all there was, everything bright and dark and open, the summer was green, so much green, and the winters were all carcasses of trees. There were no labyrinths in Brick, and there never would be. There was only ever rot and love. When I'd returned to my hometown after my stint in the city, I found everyone who'd loved me was dead or gone. I don't know why I didn't look into this before, or maybe I did and didn't care enough and forgot. The people who hated me were still alive, though, and seemed the only ones who would acknowledge me. The Town Historical Society was open on Saturdays. A small set of offices in the old Methodist high school, full of crispy paged albums run by an assemblage of middle school English teachers and local preachers, each volunteering a handful of days a month. None of them liked me that much. I went occasionally to read the genealogies and try to convince myself of my place, my point, in an order of things. But that was okay. I told myself I didn't care that they didn't like me, that I could just go back to the city whenever I wanted. That heinous old Mrs. Thomas from seventh grade was working that day. That day after the night with the liquor in the passenger seat floor. Oh, Jennifer Herndon. Haven't seen you in, what, 25 years? I felt what she perceived. Deep in the recesses of her singed limbic system as Christian benevolence. There's that joke about when Southern women say, bless your heart. They might as well tell you to rip that heart out and shove it up your ass. Well, it's absolutely demoralizing, especially when you haven't done anything but live your silly little life, and you still wind up on the receiving end of such a senseless barb. I smiled the best I ever could. Yes, ma'am. Quarter of a century since you taught me. She had that hideous, half-assed bouffant hairdo with the low bun she'd always worn. She'd taught my mother in school a half century ago and had worn it then. That and the long blue jean skirt. I thought of how her legs must chafe and sweat under it. I'd worn blue jean skirts long ago and hated them. The thought of it made me want to throw up in my mouth. But I had a mission. What brings you here? She asked. I felt like a tiny seventh grader again. The scene of her hiding my copy of the Vampire Lestat in her desk drawer playing in my head over and over again. Her, divesting me of my book, closing it with a snarl, and slamming it in her drawer of infinite pens. I was wearing ugly boys' work clothes, as I always did at that age, and still do, because I hated what puberty had done to my body and wanted to hide the carnage. She did not like that I'd hacked my own hair up to my chin to mimic Kurt Cobain on MTV, but she liked that I cared. That I cared that she didn't like it. That I cared that anyone cared. Kurt Cobain wore a dress. Why can't you? The boys would ask me and kick the seat of my pants, leaving dirty boot prints on the canvas. Kurt Cobain blew a hole in his head. Why can't you?
At the bottom of all that self-pity, I found my motivation again.
I need to look up records of a family. Irish immigrants in the 1880s, I think.
She frowned. Frowned that I had a purpose. Ever. It took only a couple of hours in the 19th century room to find town records of a Lynch family, of a name written sometimes as Moira and sometimes as Myra. It surprised me, I admit, that she was real after all. But I don't think it should have. There was no forecast for rain for several succeeding Friday nights, so I stayed in, because I was afraid I wouldn't see the hitchhiker ghost on Rikers Hill. It seemed there would be no forecast for Friday night rain ever again. My life in those days was small and vague. Not only had the universe been reduced to the hunks of it that I chose to perceive, but the understanding I did have was flimsy at best. I had some job somewhere, some loosely defined receptionist position that could pay for my half of an inexplicable duplex over on the other side of Rikers Hill from town. It doesn't make any sense to have one neighbor with whom you share a wall and a driveway and a dead lawn, not when the closest other occupied house is a mile down the road. But there were a lot of things in those days that didn't make sense. My refusal to pay attention to anything definitely contributed. I never saw my neighbor, and I like to think he never saw me. I wonder if it was intentional. This is all to say that it had been a long time since I'd experienced the simple clarity of awareness I had when I met the ghost of Moira Lynch. Living without any emotional nourishment had been sanding down my edges, and I had become an impotent creature who crawled from room to room within its house, eating some food when it was hungry and sleeping some when it was tired. I had become a plant who'd grown too big for its pot and depleted its soil and was now left to die. Its fronds slumped over the rim of its container. I once thought the purpose of life was continuing to live while absolutely mind-numbingly miserable. That there was really no meaning. And then I found out there wasn't ever much life to be had. I'd taken to angrily listening to Stevie Nicks' Belladonna album while driving the roads that delicately traced the outskirts of my dead hometown. The dead farmland, the abandoned factories, the old quarry. I don't know why Edge of 17 hit me as hard as it did. I did not understand the lyrics, and also, when I was 17, it was nearly Y2K, and I was secretly hoping the world would end because that would seem so apt. But it didn't. And I'd moved away to the city and then moved back because I'd found the city lonely and sterile as I'd made no moves to make it anything else. Now my hometown was lonely too and septic. How do you piece it together? What do you do if you've been offered the question and offered, not asked? That is the key. What do you do if you've been offered the question?
Are you sure you're alive?
She was in the front seat now, passenger side. She was so close to me, and she was so cold. And she asked me so kindly just that.
Are you sure you're alive?
I drew back, felt my shoulder against the driver's side door. I tried listening for my heartbeat. It seemed that I still lived, but I wasn't sure. Wouldn't have even been sure before. I can see through you. Moira frowned, looking down at her hand.
I'm solid, to me, at least. You're see-through.
What if I never can leave? What if I never did? After I met the ghost of Moira Lynch, I developed some paranoia and became afraid of the visitors to the office where I worked. I don't know if they were customers or clients or tenants or patients, but I found myself afraid of them, the most I'd ever acknowledged their existence. They looked at me as if they had become aware that I was no longer one of them, or that they knew I was now aware I was not one of them. That was it. That the facade could be maintained as long as I was unaware I was part of it. But I was the one to break the suspension. Those droplets of knowledge, they appeared now because I was now attuned to, well, I guess, ghosts. Before, I had floated through life. Often, I would hear the word ghost spoken concurrently with my name, but I never picked out the order of words that people would say, shooting me unashamed glances of minor disgust. One instance, of many, I'm sure, looked like this. Me, sitting at my desk, typing at a spreadsheet, unsure of what I'm entering, but pretty sure they're nouns, maybe even names. A person in a chair making a gargling noise. A person two seats down responding with a similar gargle. The two looking at me. The pair saying, "Jenny Herndon," one and then the other, and then gargling again. One gargle sounding like ghost. Me listening for Rikers Hill or Moira Lynch, but unable to hear such sounds. How could I be sure that I was hearing sounds right? How could I ever be sure? How could I be sure the sounds were the right shapes? Were the right sounds, were the right shapes? How is language failing me now? I found a print of my high school graduation photo in my house. The girl in the photo has very short, bobbed blonde hair, so freshly washed it's puffy. She's wearing a blue graduation robe and cap and no jewelry. The lobes of her ears aren't even pierced. I saw this and touched my earlobes. I found them smooth still, but swore I'd pierced them by now. Surely I would have pierced them by now? The girl in the photo, her smile looks real. She sees a future. She does not know. All this in present tense because the photo is still and forever. All else I say in past tense because I am neither of those things. How many men had thought she loved them? Before cars, had she just hesitated at the top of the hill as men walked by or rode their racking horses past? Had they seen her? Offered her a ride? A walk home? How many had grabbed her arm and swung her against a tree, only to find there was nothing to swing against the tree but themselves? The skirt of her dress seemed to barely fit in my passenger seat. She was a farmer in life, or still, and her clothes were practical, but she had so much skirt, yards and yards of skirt, with what I guessed were petticoats underneath, probably for warmth. So much ephemeral, translucent skirt flowing like liquid, like swollen floodwater around the solidity of the passenger seat. She studied me with such kindness, such interest in what looked to me like desire. I gave her a moment, but confusion and anger never showed. Just curiosity. And I kissed her. So I came to some time ago, kissing a dead woman who had never known me. I don't know why I kissed her, other than that she was there, and she was lovely, and she was looking at my mouth, and shouldn't that have been enough? Then she looked at me like I was the answer to every question she had ever asked. But it wasn't me. I wasn't the answer. It was only ever the shape of me. I took the car out of park and floored it. Her cold, translucent hand stayed in mine for far too long. In the corner of my eye, she was staring at me. And then she was gone. And only her hand remained. I couldn't have been dragging her, right? I shouldn't have floored it. I should have apologized and said, you can go away now. Maybe that would have actually helped her. I never learned the mechanics of the spirit realm. I only felt its ghosts. I came to some time ago, but it might have been the night with the liquor and the front passenger floorboards, the night before I went to the Historical Society. Or there could have been more nights, more rainy Friday nights where I saw her. But I'm not sure. That night is still, and forever, and I never did ask her how she died.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This was Only the Shape, written by Ange Baker, narrated by Haberlin Roberts. The ghost of Moira Lynch was me, Brooke Jeanette. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Bridget Freeman and Ian Epperson. Only the Shape was originally published in the most recent issue of the literary magazine 34 Orchard. Check out the show notes to read it and other unsettling, scary, and disturbing stories. Our producer-level patrons are Rick Linville, Tattooed Fox, Rhiannon, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Michael Vasquez, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Delta Tango, Chantel Payne, Nick, Emily Douglas, Stephanie Klinger, Jake R., and Abigail Perez. Thank you guys so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. Check us out on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok under Pod13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo. You'll find links to all that in our show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. You can find that in the show notes too.
Bridget Freeman is the figure in your rearview mirror.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.
Edgar said to the interviewer he was convinced that the thing out there wasn't a vault.
Yeah, I know what he thought.
Dr. Edgars didn't think it was designed to keep things out.
I know what he thought.
He thought it was designed to keep something in.
Do you even understand the difficulty trying to keep a base like Fathom at the bottom of the ocean from killing everyone in it on a daily basis?
Oh my God.
Everyone hold on to something.
I think whatever is on the other side of that door out there, it's not friendly. I think it's trying to get out. That, my friend, is a dire combination.
That's a bad sign.
Get out of the door!
It's spreading like some kind of technological contagion. We can either stop it here or watch the world burn.
Fathom, the first season of Derelict. Listen wherever you get your podcasts, or learn more at DerelictPodcast.com.